This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello and welcome to the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Premier League and the Champions League. I'm Robbie Musto, he's Robbie Earle. Today is our recap episode of week 14 of the 22-23 season, and here are today's topics. Jesse Marsh and Leeds respond to the pressure, beating Liverpool 2-1 at Anfield. Arsenal continue their winning ways, crushing Nottingham Forest 5-0 to go back to the top of the table. Manchester City grab a 1-0 win over Leicester City thanks to beautiful Kevin De Bruyne free kick. Man United hold on to beat West Ham United 1-0, and Marcus Rashford scores his 100th goal for the club. Roberto De Zerbi gets his first win for Brighton, sporting Graham Potter's return to the coast in a 4-1 win over Chelsea. Tottenham grab a late winner over Bournemouth, winning 3-2. Newcastle jump into fourth, cruising past Aston Villa 4-0. That's what we've got coming up in today's episode.
That's right, Musty, and the weekend of November 5th and 6th is full with must-watch events on NBC and Peacock. It all begins Saturday with Everton versus Leicester City. That kicks off at 1:30pm Eastern. After that, it's a turn of the horses in the Breeders' Cup. That's at 3:30pm, followed by the Clemson Tigers taking on Notre Dame, and that's football in South Bend, and capped off with a brand new edition of Saturday Night Live. The action continues on Sunday with the NASCAR Cup Series Championship. That's at 3pm, and the Titans battling the Chiefs in the Sunday Night Football. That starts at 7pm. All events live, all events exclusive on NBC and Peacock. Okay, after my mega read, my friend, let's get ourselves to Anfield. Let's get ourselves to probably the story of this match week. Let's get ourselves to Jurgen Klopp's team, who've gone back-to-back defeats, who've lost that long unbeaten home record. Let's talk about Liverpool, Rob, and where they are, and maybe give a little bit of praise to Jesse Marsh and Leeds as well, because there was some pressure on Jesse, many thinking maybe he's got a game or two to save his job. Wow, his team didn't have put out for him, I thought.
Yeah, let's start with Leeds, Rob, and that side of things. And I think you saw from the emotions at the end, the late goal going in from Somerville, you know, a young attacking wide player that was trusted to start this game. I just thought the manager made some very bold and brave decisions with his lineup, with his substitutions, with, of course, Wilfred Gnotto coming on, the young 18-year-old Italian player that gets involved in the goal, does really well on the left-hand side to create that winning goal. I mean, talk about, I don't know, a team that, you know, when it really needs a performance and a victory, we've seen Jesse Marsh gets him in a position to be able to do that. Again, there was some bravery about the lineup and the way that they faced this at 1-1, and they still were willing and able to try and get that winning goal. Massive for Leeds, huge for Jesse Marsh. I mean, we were talking on the show about it, Rob, in terms of what that does now, in terms of buying him time. I guess persuading the ownership, Rob, and maybe kind of as important, the fans. He's got to get the fans back on board. We know the last game, the chants were starting, the fans were leaving him. I hope he's earned more respect, more trust, because I believe, and I'll say it right now, that there are definitely at least 3, 4, 5 teams that are not as good as Leeds United. I think Leeds United are going to be absolutely fine this season. If everybody stays in control, stays behind the manager, stays supportive, there will be other games that don't go well. The fans have got to, in my opinion, got to stick with the manager. Because if you're going to make a change, who knows? Who knows is going to come in? This squad's been moulded by Marsh in the summer. And I think I think he deserves time and patience from everybody concerned to find some form, some results, and climb the league.
Yeah, I totally agree. It isn't a case where, I know you had maybe an argument, you know, where you say our ownership's sure before they make a choice. Steven Gerrard didn't look to me as though he was getting the right tune from his players. Didn't look as though that relationship was great between the players and Stevie, and obviously it cost him job. I don't think that's the case with Jesse Morse. And I thought the weekend, Rob, was a day that showed the players are very much with the manager, totally. And the fans seem like they're with the manager as well. It was a day for them to say, you know what, if we all back each other and stay sort of in Comedy United, then, as you say, they're brave, they're bold, Rob, which is kind of what one of the things I love about Leeds and what separates them from other teams. They are bold. Yes, they push people forward. Yes, we know if they sat back in a lower block, maybe they wouldn't concede as many goals. But This is Leeds. This is like the personality of the club and the way that they're run. And the other thing that stood out to me, Rob, was just raw energy from Leeds. The raw energy that this team have, that in the end played a part in taking the game away from Liverpool. Liverpool got all this talent and all these world-class players and great reputations and title winners. But on the day, Rob, those young group of Leeds players had more energy and drive and commitment, and it played a part in them getting the result.
You know, I'll continue that, Rob, because, you know, I think the normal kind of wisdom would be when you're struggling, right? You're at the bottom of the league table. You're under immediate pressure for your job. You're going away to Anfield. Now, yeah. I know Liverpool haven't been the same Liverpool so far this season, but it's still a very, very difficult game. I saw the lineup and thought, fair play, Jesse March, fair play. Like, there's no sense of, you know what, I'll play Matthijs Glick in midfield as well to have three kind of hard-working players, and I'll be a bit more defensive. I'll try and block it up. Absolutely not. And we've seen other teams do that, by the way, this weekend. We'll go on and talk about it. I think Leicester did it a lot. Parking the bus, I mean. Nottingham Forest certainly did it on this Sunday match day, and it didn't work out at all. He didn't do that, Jesse March. He went with a 4-2-3-1, the usual kind of young, quick attacking players in behind Rodrigo was who started the game. Bamford came off the bench and actually missed a really good chance later on. But no, to that point, you know, it doesn't look like he's the one that's going to change things too much to kind of alter the mindset of his team, that he wants them to be in this front foot, aggressive kind of posture, and it worked out. And I'm pleased for Jesse March. I'm pleased for Leeds United, I guess, and Liverpool will be frustrated. We'll get on and talk about them in a second, but massive. A really big day for Jesse March and Leeds.
And anyone whose name Crescencio Somerville, my friend, deserves a special mention. 21 years of age it is today, mate. 21 years of age.
Amazing.
And it was all about 21s, because I also read then, it's the first win that Leeds have had against Liverpool in 21 years. Huh. And the last time Liverpool were defeated at home was March 2021. So it's all the 21s,
wow,
my friend.
Amazing.
It was a day, it was in the making.
Great work, great work.
Making amazing stat there.
Before we move on from
Leeds, friend.
Before we move on from Leeds United, Rob, there's the little thing we do every week, and my underappreciated performer of the weekend.
Oh yeah.
Ilan Meslier, the Leeds United goalkeeper.
Okay.
I think there's a sense of is he very good? I mean, he's a young goalkeeper.
I'm one of those. I'm not sure yet.
But he had a good game. He made like seven saves and some really important saves to keep his team in it. You saw him celebrating at the end. You saw the Leeds players going over to Meslier. Mm. I just think, you know, he's one of those that at his age, I haven't got my numbers. He's like 21 or 22.
He's really young. Yeah.
I mean, he's got a big future.
Yeah.
And for somebody that doesn't get a lot of talk about, a young goalkeeper, a size of club of Leeds United, that performance when his manager needed him, I thought he deserved a special mention, and he gets my underappreciated.
Yeah, it's a good shout, mate, because, like you say, we've often highlighted when he's made mistakes or he's looked a little bit short of experience. But, maybe it's taken him, you know, just a year or two to get used to the Premier League. But, yeah, good shout. We have to turn our attention to Liverpool, mate, because it's not going in the manner they would want, in the manner Jurgen Klopp would want. It's another game, Rob. I think that's 8 in the last 12 where they conceded the first goal. It starts with a mistake that puts them under pressure. They've got to get back in the game. I didn't feel as I mean, they had a couple of chances, Rob, but I never felt like they particularly control the game in any periods where I'm thinking, like, that's all Liverpool, that's them coming back. we've given this team lots of praise and plaudits, Rob, when they've been going well, when they've been pushing, whether they've won games, won titles and all that. Are we at the stage where we have to take a different look at this team now? Because I just think there's a few things that are, there's a few things now that are looking a bit scrappy with this group.
That's a good way of putting it, scrappy, because I think you're right, and I think there's a problem. This is now an issue at the club. Jurgen Klopp, kind of sometimes a little bit awkward watching when he's getting grilled by the Sky reporters about why are you not doing this and why are you inconsistent and why are you conceding goals. Yeah. And I think, you know, we know there's a couple of big players that are injured right now in Diogo Jota and Luis Diaz, of course, but they've still got Firmino, Mo Salah and Darwin Nunez playing up front.
Yeah.
Like this little diamond with Firmino playing in behind Salah and Nunez. I thought those two were a little awkward together, Rob. I mean, it's kind of new, both of them playing up. I think we've seen Mo Salah, we've said on our pods, like I think he's been enjoying playing as a central nine, runs in behind, brilliant finisher in those situations. Yeah. Nunez wants to do the same thing. So it kind of made sense to play two up front centrally, but there wasn't much chemistry. It didn't really work. It's a different system again, what Jurgen Klopp's trying with this 4-4-2 diamond. He's trying to mix it around. He's trying to get the best out of this team. It's just not happening. Me and Tim Howard, Rob, we just did our little tactics session, which we do on the NBC Sports YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And, you know, we just try and pick out something afterwards on our Sunday. And, you know, the sloppy nature of both goals. And, you know, I guess you can say mistakes happen for the first one. And Tim had a really interesting...
Yeah.
I mean, that's why it's great to have Tim with us.
Yeah, he's
he just said in that situation when Joe Gomez... When he's going to play a ball to you as a goalkeeper... And he can't see you, you've got to be really careful where you run to because he's going to hit a blind ball.
Yeah.
And what Tim said is, and Alisson probably shouldn't assume that he's going to play the ball back where he wants
it.
And he said he should have held a little longer. I thought it was a really interesting point. Of course, that was the first goal. Second goal, you know, I looked at it a few times, Rob, and there's quite a lot of things in it that's very avoidable. I mean, Nyoto, the youngster that came on, somehow gets the ball into the centre, Rob. There's three Liverpool players around him. There's like three around him within a few yards. And he still manages to get the ball across. And then interesting, again, when these goals go in and we break things down, sometimes we don't see everything, but with the opportunity to take a few more looks, Virgil van Dijk, I mean, you know, we always say about defending and defenders have to be the ultimate pessimist, right? He has no sense that ball is going to come across, Rob. So when it runs across the centre, he jumps up quick, he's second to the ball, it then gets in between the feet of Somerville, Crescencio Somerville, and Van Dijk again maybe can step forward, Rob, to try and block it. Remember the goal against Man United where he kind of held his position?
Yeah, he stands, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, he's been doing that
listen,
a lot.
We've given praise to him and this team when they've done well, and it's our job to sort of see what's going on.
Absolutely.
And that was sloppy goals.
Yeah, it's harder because he's been a great player and they've done great things and his standards are so high. But that doesn't excuse him from
not being ready for the cross. Like it's late,
Rob.
You know. Yeah, absolutely.
Nah, so I had a line similar. So obviously I haven't seen the breakdown yet. Obviously I'll look at that and the goals are not great but just generally, Rob, the Virgil van Dijk, we've got to talk about, because when we're talking how great Liverpool were in the press and his influence around the back four, we've given him all the praise that any centre-back could, you know, talking about one of the best that's been in the league. You know, I think that's very much still up for debate, and the next few weeks and months will tell us more. But just the Van Dijk thing, Rob, so as I was watching and I saw the second goal, saw the game, we in the media have got this guy, you know, saying when he's at the top of his game, he's a Rolls-Royce. You know, he reads games, he's athletic, he's powerful, the size of him. Remember when we were over there and one time and he was warming up next to us, and he's a beast of a man. But can part of his problem be, Robin? I was trying to get myself in a head of like somebody like that. He's still trying to be a Rolls Royce at the moment. And he's a bit more like a Prius, in all honesty, than a Rolls Royce. Does he have to get back to just being a tough, raw defender? And it doesn't matter how classy you look. Just stop. John Terry was probably the most unclassy looking centre back we ever played. He's up there with my all time greats, Rob. Because push come to shove, he'll do what's required to stop the ball going in the back of net. I sometimes feel with Van Dijk, it's about that, but it's also about looking good doing it. Do you know what I mean? Do you know what I'm trying to get
I know
to?
Exactly what you mean, Rob. I'm just trying to think of, has he ever been a blimmin' Toyota Camry or whatever whatever reliable, earthy defender? Has he ever been that? I don't know whether he's ever been that.
Can he be that?
By the way, I totally agree with what you're saying. Roll your sleeves up, Virg. Just get back to being how brilliant you can be. Instead of, Rob, it's almost like, listen, we're having a bad time, but I'm still the same guy. And I'm, you know, I'm doing all right here. And I'm still going to look $1 million.
I want him to change.
I want him to as well.
Yeah.
And lead the team back to some standards because, you know, it's real. Of course, like, everybody, of course, Jurgen Klopp being the main man, is trying to figure out what really is going on here. This is crazy. Like, in terms of stories of the league table right now, and there's some great stories there, of course, Liverpool...
Yeah,
that were 1 point away last year and going for all four tournaments, a ninth in the Premier League after. I mean, we're almost a third in where we are. I mean, we're about a third into the campaign. Yeah, I mean, it is the biggest, and there haven't been that many injuries to afford this. So maybe there's some time.
Everybody's had their injuries, haven't they?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I know. It's remarkable, and it's a collective thing, and it goes throughout the side. It's amazing what confidence can do to the player. Of all the players, and then the team, and then the fans, and then the manager. It's difficult. It's difficult. It's a tough watch, I'm sure, for Liverpool fans right now. There's still plenty of good players there. It's not super aging squad, though. There are some older players within it. We know that. And Milner, of course, and a few others. Thiago. But
Fabinho.
This is the toughest moment in Jurgen Klopp's time in Liverpool, for sure. We've never seen... With Klopp, it's been like this. Steady up, and then win. We're on a down now, and he's got to try and arrest it, and that's not the reason.
So how do we feel about the rest of the season, Rob? Do we feel top four now? I mean, what I still think with Liverpool, and whether rightly or wrongly, is they could go on a...
Don't see it.
10-game run of winning 8 games and drawing 2. They've still got that capability, and that keeps them close to top four in Champions League football. But if this carries much longer, Rob... Yeah. They really are not going to be in. And next weekend, they go away to Spurs.
Yeah. They're 8 points away, I believe.
8 points away?
Eight points away from top four right now, I think.
Eight points from top four.
Yeah.
8 points from top four, 5 points from bottom three.
God, blimey. But you are right. They could find a groove and find some form. I mean, maybe the World Cup break. I mean, I think it's pretty amazing. We're going to go into a situation, Rob, where who knows what fettle anybody's team's going to come back. You could have people that have blimmin' won the World Cup. You could have people that are injured.
Yeah,
you could have people that have had a miserable time. Mm. You know, could be a long drawn
could
out.
Could lose the World Cup final and can't get over it.
Yeah, you can't get over it. They got straight back in Premier League matches. So that throws a huge kind of unknown into the season. Maybe it will help Liverpool to have a big break. I don't know, but that was a bit of a shocker for them. But again, just finishing off on Leeds, fair play to Leeds. And Jesse March, who I think we both really enjoy listening to, how open he is, how much he cares about it, how much he loves his job there. And it's just such a tough and a cruel environment when fans start to turn and you start to get some of the hammer.
Yeah.
So a big, big win for Martial.
It's not easy, is it? And it's a big club with big voices and you know, really powerful and committed fan base. I thought he did a brilliant job at the end, just at the very end of the game, Rob, where he composed himself, he shook hands with Jurgen Klopp, you could see it was burning in him, and then a couple of his players came over and he couldn't let it go.
Yeah.
But I thought he did really good. That was classy as well.
Yeah.
Listen, pressure was on him there, and he knew a bad defeat there might have been the end of his Premier League tenure. It was that strong. So, well done, Leeds. Well done, Jesse Marsh. Mm. Work to do for Liverpool.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Okay, mate, we've spent enough time on that. Let's move on to a team who continue to be part of the title picture right now, Robbie Musto. And I'm absolutely amazed that we are getting to that World Cup break. That's a unique season. And Arsenal are going to be in top three position. From where they've come, from where we started, from even some people saying, well, it can't last. Have we got to start talking Arsenal in a different vein now, mate?
Well, I'm not. I know exactly how I feel about this. First off, going from fifth in this division, given the teams and squads and everything else that's here, to be challenging for the title is incredibly well done. Like, has anybody done that? Maybe they have. Yeah. But fifth to they're going to trying to go from fifth to first in this league with the teams that there is remarkable. Yeah. Superb, brilliant. I feel that with European competition, Rob, in the second half after the World Cup, it's kind of the same team that play the Premier League matches. Now, I know there's some rotations in the Europa League, and not all the team, by the way, but there are some rotations. But for the most part, it's the same team. It's not like City where you don't know who's going to play because they're going to switch people out all the time. I just think that's going to catch up with them. When you start looking into February, March, when the European Games kick off again, and they've got to play the Thursday, Sunday thing, I just think it's got to be so difficult. Yeah. And also, of course, given Man City and Haaland and how he's done, to think that they can be right there. We had a kind of a bit of fun in the studio today, and like in determining what means that they have been genuine title contenders. And we kind of said, you know what, if we're into April, if we're into the start of April, and Arsenal are within 6 points of Man City, that is incredibly impressive. And I said, I just don't see it. But they might. Do you think that, Rob, like, say the first week in April, that's a lot of games, they stay within six points, it would be fantastic for Arsenal.
Absolutely. And I'm, you know, listen, you know me, you know, go back to the Leicester story, go back to sort of pre-Liverpool, before we knew where they were and winning titles and losing titles by the odd point, Rob. We didn't know back then when they were 12, 13, 14 games in. Like, our big question was, we've never seen Liverpool put 38 games together. So there's always a question about your group until you get there, until you know. One thing I'd like, Rob, one thing I'd like the ownership to do, and if Mr. Kroenke or his son or any of them that are listening in, go and get what we call in our fruit cocktails some melon. And melon is your filler, Rob. Melon is your filler for your squad. Arsenal need some fillers. Some Thursday night European fillers who can be of a level that help the football club, but not change what's going to be the starting.
They've got some fillers, Rob. I mean, they've got
players.
Some, and they do get help. I think those fillers have got to come in the Premier League as well at some point, Rob.
Well, the kid did today, didn't he?
Vieira's done that before. He's coming and done well. We got Lokonga,
Nelson, Vieira, and Nketiah. Yeah, Pepe's still at the football club, isn't he?
He started against PSV. Of course, it wasn't a good game for Arsenal. They lost on Thursday. Tierney played. Holding played. Lokonga played. You know, Vieira played. So there is a little bit of filler there, but if that's enough to give the first teamers a break.
Smith Rowe to come back, isn't he?
Yeah, he's to come back.
Yeah, Smith Rowe.
Elneny's injured. Zinchenko's close to coming back. Matt Turner,
I just think one or two bodies might fatten it up, might just give them the opportunity, Rob, to hang in there, because that's going to be the problem. I mean, you know, of all things today, we'll talk about Richard Nelson in a moment, because I just did a little. I had a little look at him and about him because I wasn't too sure. Come through the academy, they're saying his numbers have been spectacular, played all the England youth things. They've been saying, everybody thought he's another Saka, and it hasn't quite worked out for him as yet. He was on loan at Feyenoord last year.
He's been on loan, he's been injured. I think Reece Nelson's been around forever, it seems like, but he hasn't really
had that
breakout yet.
How much does... Like the Saka and the injury, and you know, if one other Saka was out and you lose one of the other key, Xhaka right now or Odegaard, does that become a big problem, or can the Vieiras come in? Can Lokongos come in and keep the standard?
Well, that's a big question, Rob, and that's where again, you know, I'm not sure where there's certain, because there's so many tough Premier League games now. It's not just the big boys. There's tough games every week.
Whether
they can come in over a long period of time, I don't know. I mean, of course, Bukayo Saka will be a concern for both Mikel Arteta and possibly Gareth Southgate with England. I don't know. He kind of walked off. You know, it didn't look too bad an injury, but he had to come out of the game. But that's the question. I mean, the other thing, Rob, Gabriel Jesus, I mean, was all over the place today. I mean, we see him running back, tackling back, chasing, getting out wide, crossing the ball in. He almost scored, hit one. Yeah. It's a month, I think it's since, a month since he scored
since
a goal.
Is
there any concern?
Could have done with one, couldn't he?
Mm.
Not when he's playing as well and others are scoring, Rob. I think if he's having a little bit of a spell or drier spell, you know, he's got to contend with now being the lead number one name in the attacking part of the pitch and deliver over the course of a season, which he's never had to do to this point. He's been in and out of City, had little runs and had little pieces. Now he's got to be that reliable. And in fairness, his game is still looking good in terms of the other things, but as we know, confidence comes from the goals. You know, for centre forwards, that's what they want. And I thought that would have been a Jesus goal would have been today, as well as he played, as well as he was involved. A Jesus goal would have been icing on the cake and just a boost for Arsenal going into the next two games. And I know it's their next game, Rob.
Yeah,
is away at Chelsea.
Yeah, it's a beauty.
Away at Chelsea next two games, a big game, isn't it? Because at the moment, I think they're 10 points clear of Chelsea as we stand now. Can you imagine them beating Chelsea going into that break? It's all of a sudden looking pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing I just wanted to mention, mate. Yeah, okay. Sorry, just on this one. We had a beer with Ian Wright towards the end of the Fan Fest. And it was something interesting he talked about. And I just wanted to bring it up, maybe for a couple of our viewers and listeners, especially those in the US who may not know, that he was talking about... There's a section of the stadium at Arsenal that there's these young, all the young kind of fans go to, and it's creating a real buzz, and they've got their own songs, and there's a real atmosphere change. And again, second half when the football was flowing, you sense that, you know, around, we don't often see great shots of the crowd and where it is in the crowd, but there is a sense, Rob, that there's this kind of new wave of energy that's coming with Arsenal that they're feeding off. And Wright was saying there's like this section of the stadium now that's alive all the time, and they're singing and they're getting it going. And he said it's a very different place to how it used to be, the Emirates.
Yeah, and I tell you what, you know, I thought they needed it in this game, because there was moments in the first half, Rob, after they scored it was a little flat. It's a little flat. And I remember saying at half time, like, that's, you know, great start from Arsenal and fair play to Martinelli, but they probably should have put Forrest away. Forrest were there for the taking as they got properly taken in the second half. And I think Arteta said afterwards that he was a bit disappointed they hadn't scored that second goal. It made the second half a little tougher, but of course they get ahead and they crush Nottingham Forest, Rob, that we should come on to talk about. Great for Arsenal. Well done. I mean, 5-0. Wow, after a couple of apparently, disappointing performances, though, you still look at the league table and they'd won 9 out of 11 games or something. So, well done, Arsenal. Nottingham Forest, Rob, who have been a little better last four games, 2 wins, 2 draws, better defensively.
Yeah.
This more of a solid, pragmatic approach, which, was the right thing to do. Talk about one step forward, maybe 2 steps forward and like 5 back in the space of 90 minutes. I thought Nottingham Forest were just collapsed, were shambolic. And, I'll chuck in the main kind of my main thought of Forest, Rob. I'll chuck it into you now, as I said on our air. I would question whether, when there's so many new players in a dressing room, right, and you've just signed a new, shiny new contract, you've just arrived, everything's new and different, there's a ton of players, it's a little bit quiet, a little bit awkward. The games start, and you start to have some travail, some struggles, some suffering. There's nothing to go back on if you're a new team, Rob. There's no kind of history, when such, or you've built relationships with certain players and like, come on, you know, we know what it's like at this situation. There's no kind of spirit to go back to as a foundation of, right, let's get back to, because what are they getting back to? It's so new. Is there any, do you think there's anything in that, Rob, where it's like, because there's, I don't know, there's just,
I do.
Do they care? I mean, do they care enough? Because they're all so new and it's, I don't know.
They'll care. They care because they're professionals. For some, it's a chance of playing in the Premier League, some of which probably wouldn't get the opportunity. So I think it might be going a little too far to say, do they care? But it's how they care, Bob. It's how you show you care. Like, if I'm Nottingham Forest, and I totally agree with your point about the numbers coming in and the contract
togetherness
situation.
Togetherness and all that. The harmony and all that. There is
no togetherness yet because we haven't built any. Here's an interesting one that I think when that happens, Rob, as well. Let's just say there's 26 people in the dressing rooms, you're training or whatever. There's as many unhappy people in that dressing room as happy. And unhappy pros, unhappy older pros,
group
are not
together.
Good to have around the football
club. No, they group together as
group
well.
Group together, and they'll be sitting in the back of the bus, or they'll be on training on Monday going, God, them lot weren't very good, were they? When's our turn? And so you get this kind of a bit of us and them in the dressing room, Rob. The team that are playing, and that's never a good sign. Never, ever a good sign. My other point on that, on this one, and this is where I was, and I think Steve Cooper was shocked today. I'll get when you go to Arsenal and they're better than you and beat you. I'll get when you go to City, Liverpool. If you go to Southampton and Brighton and they outplay you. But never, Rob, it's unforgivable if you've come to a football club, whether you've come up with them or you've been bought in, and you don't give it your all. You don't win some battles. You don't put all the effort and energy. That's a given. You can do that regardless of how good you are, how you set up, what the score is. It didn't look to me, Rob, like they were particularly up for it.
Well, he said it. He said that's what he said afterwards, Rob, in his interview. Steve Cooper said, we didn't run. We didn't give what we should have. Now, that's a terrible sign.
Wow.
I mean,
that's a sign.
God, blimey.
That's
so,
not good, my friend. That's not good.
He signed a new contract. Results got a little better.
Yeah.
Now, was he given a new contract? So, if things don't go well... Well, at least he gave him a chance. He gave him a second chance.
He gets a little payoff. And he'll get a nice payoff, and then we move on. I don't think he's nailed on to be manager of Nottingham Forest by the time we come to the end of the season.
I don't.
I think this owner and this group are ambitious to do more and get better.
The money they spent.
And
the
I think if we get to the win to this break, they're down and looking out, I think change comes.
Absolutely. I mean,
wouldn't be surprised to see Sean Dyche. Wouldn't surprise me at all to see him in that hot seat second half of the season.
No, yeah, I think you're right. I mean, God, it's so difficult, of course, in that league. But I think you're right that they've spent so much money to let this continue for any length of time. Sean Dyche
was 23 years out of the Premier League, and to go straight back, mate, it would be disastrous for that football club.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
All right, move it on, mate.
Okay, mate, should we move things on?
Yeah.
Leicester City 0, Manchester City 1. Not your classic Manchester City game. Brilliant Kevin De Bruyne free kick, good enough to win the points. No Erling Haaland. Suppose no problem for City, get the job done. What's your takeaway on this one, mate, with Leicester? I know you had a thought about them sitting deep and trying to low block against the City team who are going to dominate possession, and it's, whether you can stop enough chances. Goalkeeper has a good day.
Yeah, I mean, we saw Brighton do it a very different way last weekend, Rob. They lost 3-1 at home. Of course, Man City were at home. But I really enjoyed the way that Brighton tried to do it. I mean, you can't... I mean, I've said many times, sometimes you've got to be pragmatic and get behind the ball against City. They did that, Leicester. They did it. And they stuck to that kind of game plan throughout. Maybe they could argue that, look, it took an amazing free kick from Kevin De Bruyne to find a way through. I mean, Pep saying afterwards that he's back. I don't think he went anywhere, by the way. But Pep said, he's not been his best.
Yeah,
but he said he hasn't been his best. He's been quiet. He hasn't been involved. And he said, now, involved. Like, that's De Bruyne. I mean, De Bruyne, the free kick was incredible. I'm a bit disappointed, I suppose, with Julian Alvarez, Rob. I mean, maybe that's a little harsh. It's hard to jump into the team as a number nine after Haaland and try and, you know, be super effective. And so I thought he was a little quiet.
I'd agree. I think sometimes, Rob, that shows, just on that, that shows the complexity of going into a City team. Jack Grealish is great Premier League footballer. They struggle to still settle into City's team. Yeah. Because Haaland makes it look so easy and because of all his natural attributes, I think, you know, for we've seen many centre-forwards, haven't we, you know, who it takes a moment, I think.
Yeah, it does. I mean, but City got it done, Rob, and you know, Leicester didn't really change their approach too much. A couple of looks, but yeah, I still think Brendan Rodgers has still got a lot of work to do, Rob. I know, you know, recently won these games against the bottom three. I think they were when they played them, or they are now, or something. They got wins. Still a long way to go for Rodgers. I still think he owes the fans a little bit. I still think there's a bit of underachievement going on. Of course, it's difficult against Man City. We'll see what Leicester do next weekend. They're away at Everton. That's kind of an interesting game. The late game on Saturday. So we'll see. But no, not much else to say. I mean, City's style a little different because Haaland wasn't there. Didn't always look super connected and fluid as normal. But, you know, De Bruyne is special. I mean, it's a picture-perfect technique. Yeah. It's just a thing of beauty. Unstoppable. I mean, Danny Ward's dive is... I mean, he's so far away from it. So City, they get it done again.
I heard a radio debate, mate. I always try and chuck one of these pub radio debates in, and maybe for a discussion, but who's more important, Haaland or De Bruyne, for a City team? Who could you miss?
De Bruyne, probably. Probably De Bruyne.
I was going to say, I'd have to probably go down the line of KDB.
Yeah.
Because they've won stuff without him. They've won a title without him already.
Yeah, and they can. And if something happened to Haaland, you'd still fancy him to do it, given on what he can do. Mm. And also with Haaland, he kind of relies on De Bruyne to give him a lot of his crosses and passes and assists.
Yeah, the service.
So, that's a good shout. Yeah, but I'd say De Bruyne as well.
It's an interesting one, Okay, mate, let's move on to those teams battling for a top four spot. Let's start with Manchester United, the game at Old Trafford. Interesting game, probably not, certainly Ten Hag said after the game, not always to his liking. Mm. Obviously got the win, tried to shore things up late on as West Ham pushed forward and probably would feel, David Moyes would feel his team deserved and should have got maybe a point out of it. What was your overview on United's day? Because I know you were a little disappointed when you said first off in terms of the control and giving the ball away quite cheaply and wasn't what we've seen over the last couple of games where we've, you know, the Chelsea game where they drew and played particularly well and you know, the Liverpool game that they dominated possession. Wasn't that kind of day today?
No, I just expected a bit more sparkle, a bit more of that attacking power, expansion, fluidity, speed that we've seen at Old Trafford against Spurs. Was it Spurs, the 2-0 one, Rob? They won recently.
Spurs, yeah.
Before the Chelsea one. Brilliant, brilliant performance. 2-0 and Fred and Spurs, Bruno Fernandes. Yeah. So it's kind of different. We still had the width there. Of course, Ronaldo got the start up front. Casemiro did the holding role again, and Eriksen. Harry Maguire was a story. Victor Lindelof was ill, not able to play, so Maguire had to start back there. There's a couple of stories of players that we'll get onto, Rob. It's just in general, and I could sense it. We had a little ISO camera on Ten Hag in the first half, Rob, and he sat there and he looks unhappy and he's chuntering and he's kind of so he expected better passing. Because if you don't pass a ball well, then you get these turnovers, you risk getting caught on a counter-attack, you can't get attacking play. It's
control,
so much that's reliant on accurate, crisp passing, which wasn't there for United. Many players giving it away. Then you get, like he said afterwards, Rob, he called it a tennis match where you go from one end, the ball goes to one side, goes back to the other side. It's not what he wants at all. So, listen, it's credit that they get the job done, but not really the full-flowing United that I was kind of excited to see.
Yeah, do you know what I wrote down? A sort of average performance, but I thought it was a good day for Ten Hag in that some of his structures you can see it's not the when we don't play well we get in Brighton's and Brentford type of situation. So it's more controlled. There is a structure, Rob.
Yeah.
But the other big thing I took away from today was the standards now with this guy.
Yeah.
With Ollie, under Ollie, if that was a win, that was a win. Like, we did okay. You know what I mean? Yeah, but it was a win for Ollie. This guy's saying it's a win, but if we do this on a regular basis, we'll get hurt. Mm. And I thought he's setting his standards in the way he talks. I just thought United are going in the right direction, because this guy, even when winning, is going to make sure that players know that, you know, we've got to still do things better. And as you say, they needed two moments of brilliance, from one from the centre forward, the young centre forward playing on the left, and one from the goalkeeper, a couple of saves late on from De Gea that you know, kept them the points. But it was one of those days where I think, like you say, as a coach, it gives you work to go back on the training now and get people doing, because you can revert back to, listen, we won at the weekend, but we're going to be better than that. I think we have to get to the two stories, Robin, and I know Bex and you, Tim, touched on Marcus Rashford. Let's start with him. Just, okay. I mean, what a day he had. What a change. You know, there was two things that stood out for me, and you actually said exactly one of the things I'd wrote down, where I just said, it was a day when he looked more dangerous for Ronaldo, had more confidence in Ronaldo, and looked like he wanted to be the man. Mm. And the second thing that I really, really liked was the joy with what he had when he scored his goal. Sometimes Marcus Rashford, I always feel like, is such a nice guy, and if he doesn't score, it's not important either. Today, it really looked like he wanted to make a mark. And when he scored, like, the look on his face and the joy and, like, the... I think he's just starting to believe in himself again, Rob. 100 goals now for Manchester United. Yeah. 22nd, I think, in the 22nd player to do in their history. He's still... Rob, he's 25 tomorrow. He's only 25. I didn't move to the Premier League till I was 25.
Yeah, 100 goals is good, by the way.
Incredible.
100 goals is good
it's
for that
incredible.
Club. Listen, there's no question today. He looked $1 million, and you're right. He looked like he was going to play a leading part in this game right from the start. Where he runs inside and takes a ball right off the foot of Ronaldo. Doesn't get it, but he's confident enough to do that. Now, I definitely like him more on the left. I just do. I think it suits him perfectly on that left hand side, making runs in. He spoke afterwards and said about his desire to get in there more, to score more goals. Did it today. Now, I'm not going to be two-faced about this. I have been really frustrated by Marcus Rashford over the last couple of seasons. Where I want to see more. I'm not seeing enough. I'm frustrated. Like, the talent that he's got, he's not doing it. He's not bringing it. Body language, etc., etc., etc. He hasn't played a minute for England, Rob, in 2022. You know, and there's talk now about England call-up. Gareth Southgate, the England manager, was there. That's brilliant today from Rashford. But tell me why. And also, by the way, he put a tweet out, Rob, which is a very interesting tweet, where he said, almost saying, like, my mind or my headspace wasn't right last year. Found it difficult. He's obviously feeling better now. Does that mean that he might slip backwards at some point? Was that a wise thing to... I mean, he's so open. He's such a lovely human being, of course.
Tell me
why he's going to be... So why is he going to be different going forward?
Let's go to the headspace and where he was and maybe lack of confidence and whatever. We have to, mate, and we are the dinosaurs who played during the 90s and early 2000s when concussions and injuries, and you should have injections and injuries to make sure you could play and managers would let you play. We're in a very different time now, thankfully. And we, as watchers of the game, viewers, supporters, have to recognise that there is also a mental health issue around football now that's very real. Harry Maguire, his mate at the other end of the pitch, mate. I could not believe what he's gone through over the last 6 to 8 weeks. It must be horrendous to have been Harry Maguire. If Marcus Rashford, who's a very smart guy and done some brilliant things outside of the game as well, is coming out and saying that, he's doing that to let people in and to understand what's going on. Now, if he's been able to address that with help... And I believe now a lot of clubs have mental health coaches as part of the staff. If he's been helped to get through that, and now we're looking at a period where he's better, he's maybe got some tools to deal with it, to get himself in the right place, or know who he's going to talk to, whether it's a manager, whether it's a coach, whether it's other players, then that's why he can be better. That's why he can be more consistent, because maybe that lack of confidence is something that's been in him since he's been a kid going in at United, playing with these superstars in this dressing room full of international players. And he's a kid, young kid from Manchester who's got loads of talent, but just can't find the levels of consistency and kind of believe in himself a little bit.
No, that's a good shout. It really is. And he also said, Rob, that there's a different energy about the club. He felt it in pre-season. Obviously, they had a bad start first couple of games. And of course, it's the manager's job to get the best out of players. And maybe Ten Hag is going to be that guy to consistently get the best out of Marcus Rashford. I mean, Rashford on the left hand. So when you start to sort of, I'm sure the United fans kind of fantasize about a great United, a great, quick, skillful finisher of Marcus Rashford from the left hand side is all the United, they'd love to see that. It's just like, okay. That was brilliant today. He was the reason why they won the game. Best player for United by a mile. Loved it. Now, come on. Yeah. I mean, you can't do that every single week. We know that. You know, we've played hundreds of games. No. We know that. But that's the sort of spirit and the determination, the hunger that I hope he brings now. And, you know, whether he'll get a late shout, Robin, in the England squad, Gareth Southgate was there. You know, there's talk about who's going to be our backup striker. I mean, that Marcus Rashford, and I know we had Lee Dixon on that said that he'd 1,000,000% take him in the England squad. I think a lot of people would. I just, he was not in the last squad. He's not played a minute for England in 2022. I don't know whether, do you think Gareth can switch quickly and bring him in, given how he's looked? We've said about it that it could be interesting these few months before the season that people can play themselves into the squad.
If he plays, scores a couple of goals, confidence is high. I think in the next couple of weeks, Rob, I don't see any reason why he couldn't. I don't think he's a nailed on, but I definitely think he's part of a conversation. Just on that one as well, Rob, I just wanted to get your thought again. Just on, you got me going with the Rashford thing. When would you say, you know, obviously you started your career at Oxford, then went on to Middlesbrough early and had your 10, 12 years up there, successful years. When did you feel like, I kind of got this game. Like I know my position. I'm reading it. You know, when you felt there was a period in the thing where you were on top of your game, weren't you? You're on top of your body, your mentality. You knew the game tactically in a good place. Because for me, that was 25, 26, when I was at my most consistent, and I kind of felt like I've kind of got this thing now.
Yeah,
I'm just saying we're saying that Marcus Rashford might be just hitting that space as well, because he started so early and done all what he'd done. He's still only 25. Couldn't he have worked a few things out?
Yeah, I mean, I think I look back and I remember a sweet spot. And it was around the same kind of age. I was so in shape that I could, you know, I felt confident that I could disrupt the game and affect the game all the time. And that is probably. Yeah, it is into your mid-20s, probably, because you've learned a little bit. But yeah, so it's interesting. Where it's different, Rob, is that we've seen flashes of brilliance before and then it's dropped off again. Let's enjoy today's performance and we've given him a ton of credit hope that continues, because that was pretty special. And just a quick line on Ronaldo, Rob. He got the start today. Sancho sat on the bench. Ronaldo was in. Did okay, but not... Yeah. What do you think of how that went for him?
That's part of the, you know, Exhibit A, why he's not going to start every game, Rob. He's not, you know, he can't, even at his age, even with his ability, affect games and you know, show 2-3 goals every week. These days when he's going to be sometimes not as effective, and that's the incentive for the Sanchos to get himself back in that team. Martial's to come. Elanga played today. Anthony is saying, you know, there's an exciting mix of young forwards at Manchester United, if they can bring that consistency in terms of goals and performances. That's without Ronaldo. And if Ronaldo's there, then so be it. But, I thought it was one of those days when you sometimes realise that he's not going to be a main player for Manchester United every game.
We'll get on to a quick line on West Ham United. I just want to finish with Harry Maguire. Just you know, he started today.
And
David De Gea. Yeah, it was brilliant. Maguire just did well, did okay. Yeah. Like, I mean, it was a decent game for him to play in. I thought he did okay. I think it's important that he's back out there. He's clapping the fans at the end of the game when they're winning, and he's, you know, he's kind of celebrating with the team a little bit. I felt good for him as well that he's out there playing again.
Yeah,
you know,
good for him.
Who knows what's going to happen with the World Cup? Southgate really likes him, trusts him. I think it's really important for him to get minutes. But you finish off on David De Gea.
Yeah, and David De Gea, I just thought, Rob, when I looked at the when I finished the game and I wrote down the two players, were Marcus Rashford and David De Gea. Mm. Are they part of the future or are they part of the past? And in different ways and at different ages, it's like De Gea can still come up with brilliant moments. So I read a tweet that was put out today that, you know, Spain have got a 55-man provisional squad for the World Cup. He's not in it. Now, is that because he's now seen as the defunct goalkeeper, doesn't use his feet, that, you know, he has the odd moment now and then, lapse of concentration? He's still important to United, mate. He's still very, very important to Manchester United. And I still think these are a role and these are future for David De Gea at the football club.
Yeah, I do too. I mean, I think there's talk about contracts, isn't it, right now? And it's stalling a new contract offer for De Gea or something, which isn't great. But no, he was superb today. A couple of really, really great saves. West Ham played well. West Ham wasn't much in it today, Rob. We had the stats at the end of the game, as we always do. And guys, pretty even on almost everything. Final piece wasn't there. Scamacca, a bit disappointed, really. I thought he was luckiest down the field, actually.
I've been a little disappointed with him, Rob, generally. Yeah. Mm. I've seen him in Europe score a few goals, but I did a game last week, the Monday night game, and he didn't particularly play well. His build-up play was poor against Bournemouth. He didn't link people in very well, and, you know, it might take a moment. Another young player coming to the Premier League might take him a moment, get used to it.
Yeah, Bowen as well. I thought Bowen had a great chance. He missed it the ball a little bit towards the end of the game. But they're improving. And David Moyes afterwards was a little frustrated, but appreciating that the team is improving. Again, they've got the Thursday, Sunday thing going on. We never seem to talk much about West Ham, Rob. They've definitely improved where they've been at. I mean, Flynn Downs is an interesting player playing in the hole now. Paqueta is out injured at the moment. Yeah. They just can't. You know, the wide players are not scoring. Bowen's not scoring. Benrahma's not scoring. Mm-hmm. Scamacca. I thought Antonio looked fired up when he came into the game, Mikel Antonio. A tough day for West Ham fans.
They're playing decent football. Just, you know, final touch in the 18-yard box. And the other thing with West Ham, they rarely got well beaten either. They've been in most games and, like I say, with better finishing. I think they certainly have a few more points.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Okay, let's move it to a team that were ticking along nicely under the new manager, Graham Potter, returning back to Brighton. I mean, sometimes it's almost written, these things, isn't it? He's unbeaten, he goes back to his former club, he gets done for, his team look a little bit in disarray at times with the system and the way he was playing. And what do we make of Graham Potter's return to the Amex?
They got smashed. They got smashed by Brighton. I love how Brighton played. I loved how brave they were. Yeah. Roberto De Zerbi is going to be my new Graham Potter, my new kind of fascination is going to be with him. Because I love somebody coming into this league and doing something different. I mean, I got up on the tactics session. I said, well, just tough one to predict. This is how Brighton are going to play. This is how Chelsea are going to play. Chelsea was pretty accurate. Brighton was way wrong. It went with four at the back, kind of 4-4-1-1. You know, those, and it was fascinating because De Zerbi kept his wide players high, expecting the five to come back for Chelsea. They didn't. Potter said, no, you know what? I don't care. I'm still going to go with the three. So it's interesting tactically. I love the energy from Brighton's side. I think it shocked Chelsea how quick they came out, and Potter couldn't adjust his team well enough. Looked a little kind of lethargic Chelsea. I just loved everything that Brighton did.
Yeah.
I just did. And Moises Caicedo with the through ball that led to, I can't remember which goal now. I mean, they were superb. Trossard switching from a wing back to a centre forward made sense. Welbeck didn't start the game. Lallana was just in behind Trossard.
No.
Estupiñán played left back. Little Mitoma, you know, that played left sided. I mean,
started really well, didn't he?
Yeah, it's going to be hard to read, you know, which is good. De Zerbi's teams. And, of course, he needed the win, Rob. You know, you talked about it. Was it last weekend or a couple of weekends ago where, you know, he needs to win, which he did need a win.
Just needs a win.
What a way. What a way to get cracking, mate, with that win.
And, again, I was watching the game and you're fascinated by it, Rob, but at some point, and the bravery of Graham Potter and the creative, inventive way he sets his team out, but I thought it was a classic day, and you said, quite rightly, with the wing-backs. When you've got Ryan Sterling and Christian Pulisic as your wing-backs and you push them up and they stay there, Rob. Mm. In any system, unless you're totally controlling the ball, the wing-back's got to have some defensive responsibility.
Right. Yeah.
And these two don't. And they got down that side, you say, the Caicedo ball to Estupiñán down that side. Yeah. There's a couple of times that Sterling just ain't coming back down on his side, mate. He ain't going to do on this left-hand side. So Correa's getting... exposed and they're getting
they've got the crosses in there, Rob. The crosses that force their own goals a little bit. One was a set piece,
but, goals. You know, is that something Graham Potter's gonna have to deal with, Rob? Or is that him? That's the way he's gonna play, and he's gonna want better control and not giving the ball away. I mean, Thiago Silva was good. He had one of those days where it wasn't quite happening for him, made a couple of errors and got out of a couple, but also left himself short a couple of times as well. Is that who Graham Potter is, mate? Is that the belief in what he does and how he sets it up?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. We've seen that many times before. I don't think he's going to change on the back of this. Mm. I think he was surprised by Brighton in this game. And everybody, you know, De Zerbi's new. Like, we don't know what he's going to do in certain situations. You can watch his team play against certain teams, but you don't know. Until you've seen more of a body of work, you don't really know what to expect. Maybe the way he played against Man City was a clue. They lost that game, but still approached it with great energy and with tactical kind of bravery. They just had a bad day, Chelsea. Couldn't handle it. But, when we think of course, Christian Pulisic, who, you know, we keep a special eye on, of course, playing a right wing-back, Sterling, Rob. I mean, I think we've started to talk about, you know,
he
don't look quite
like,
you know, under when he first went there.
He's
over
happy, is he?
I'm not sure wing-back's a future for him. I know why he's there. I know why he's there for a goal threat in a different position to your central attackers. And Pulisic, Rob.
Yeah.
I mean, again, he doesn't really play wing-back. It's okay if you can stay right wing. Not right wing-back, but right wing.
Yeah.
And you get the ball and you're taking him on and you're involved. But a game like that where you're forced to be on the back foot doesn't suit both of those players.
Yeah, it doesn't suit him, does he? Doesn't suit him.
So Potter, you know, we give him praise when he does something that we think, well, that's clever.
For sure.
This wasn't one of those. It was a bit of a humbling experience for him going back to Brighton, where he got a little bit of stick for the way that he left and then coming back.
How did you feel about the stick?
Well, you know what?
I was uncomfortable with it. I think, listen, what that guy's done sometimes in football, and I know football fans, you know, once you've left your club, that's it, and you made the decision to move on, but he didn't have to do some great stuff at that football club. Didn't have to put them
on
the map.
Goodness. I mean, you can't imagine. But that's one thing, and that's 100% right. He did an amazing job for that club. But I thought a Brighton fan, I listened to on the radio, Rob, put it right. He basically said, I'm kind of paraphrasing a little bit, said, you know, we really appreciate what Graham Potter did for Brighton Hove and Football Club. But this is soon. He's come and taken, he's left us quickly.
Yeah.
He's taken loads of our staff. Mm. He's taken one of our players in Cucurella. So that's where it comes from, Rob, I think. Now, he said, if he comes back in a year's time or whatever, and we've got over it, and it's a little bit of, you know, we've got a new manager, we're playing well, then he will get a bit raw. Given the amount of people that left one club. And they're still after one of their recruitment guys as well, I believe. I think Chelsea are trying to get another recruitment part who's been responsible. I can't remember his name. Is it Win Stanley or somebody else that's been responsible for bringing in all these South American players? These great signings that Brighton have made. So Chelsea are trying to pinch. What's it? Headhunt. They're trying to headhunt the best people in certain positions. So that's where it comes from, I think.
Okay. Hmm. But well, his old team certainly gave him a bit of a doing. Maybe a little thought in terms of that. He put a good squad together. De Zerbi's taking it on in his own style, and a great win for De Zerbi, great result for Brighton, and keeps them sort of top end of the table looking in good shape. Let's move on to Tottenham Hotspur, my friend, because kind of sometimes scratch my head with Tottenham. Never quite know what is coming, what's playing. We know at times the football isn't as sparkling as others, but they get results. 2-0 down in this game, mate, as I'm watching this one play out, and I'm thinking, God, what, this is going to be a terrible result. And from read a few reports, apparently Antonio Conte has the half-time team talk of half-time team talk, get into his team a little bit, gets them a little bit more aggressive on the front foot, makes a couple of changes, and they manage to win the game 3-2, mate, which is kind of part of the, for me, the strength of Antonio Conte. He can physically get to people and make things happen, whether he's on the touchline or whether he's a half-time in the dressing room, mate. That's the way that Spurs are going to have a chance, because they're not going to play any differently, mate. I don't think we're going to see a different Spurs in terms of playing and plan B and all this that people are talking about.
You say that,
I think,
Rob,
it's just doing...
You say that, but there's a normal Spurs, right, which we know what it's all about. It's defence first, it's shape.
The normal Conte Spurs defence.
Normal Conte Spurs.
Yeah.
But there is an emergency Spurs that's pretty good. And if they go behind, they step into this different gear where, like, oh, the shackles are off, let's go and take it to the opponents. I think we've seen that. We do see that sometimes if the game's not going right, or it's 0-0 in the first half, second half, they step it up a little bit. I think there is another gear they can go to if they need be, and this worked out brilliantly where they come back and win it late. Bentancur, was it, got the late goal with the side?
Bentancur with the late goal.
Yeah, with the late goal.
I mean,
it's so funny. Like it's not just you. I think a lot of the Spurs fans are like, what, don't really know how to feel about Antonio Conte. We have a producer on our show called Mike, and he's a big Spurs fan, and he speaks to me in my ear in the studio, where both of our ears in the studio, and he's like moaning about Spurs 1 minute, and then, well, hang on a minute, Mike, I think that's a kind of normal, typical view right now of Spurs fans, is like, as long as they're winning and they're in the third place in the Premier League, it's all right, because then you feel like you know, this, he's got this, and we know what we're doing, and it's not always pretty, but who cares? We're winning games. That continues. Like, there's been a few dodgy ones, but that continues given that victory at Bournemouth. So, again, it was hard for me to get a good sense of it. It was like a million games going on at 10 o'clock on Saturdays. One of those goals flying in everywhere, but we're watching the spurt when the goals are going in. We're looking at that, and that was some comeback, wasn't it? It's good stuff.
Yeah, they were saying as well, Bob, one of the keys to the game, and as I was watching some highlights, was that Lucas Moura coming on, and it gave an extra body up front, and it livened up Kane and Son, who were dropping deep and not getting much possession. All of a sudden, it was the three up front. So it looks to me as though the better Spurs, and again, depending on the game and how it's being played out, is three attackers and those four across the middle, rather than that extra man in midfield who doesn't necessarily have the creativity of a Bruno Guimarães or Bruno Fernandes or Eriksen or one of those. They're not that type of player. Mm. So it's almost better to get another body up top and get the front three going.
Yeah.
Got the win. Yep. Antonio Conte does his stuff at half time, got the 3 points. It was important, 2-0 down, and keeps them sort of ticking along in that top four. Let's talk about another team, mate, who've jumped from this time last year being bottom three, looking pretty hopeless, to top four, four goals. Miguel Moran on fire at the moment. Eddie Howe continuing to go from strength to strength. And the Newcastle fans lapping up some attacking, attractive football.
Well, we've got to apologise, Rob, initially, because we haven't talked up Newcastle United enough. And to be fair, you know, we watch as many games as we can. I don't feel like Newcastle has been a featured game for us for a while, where we get a real detailed look at Newcastle United. You know, we haven't had them on much. We could have had them in this game. And now I hope that, of course, there's some things we can control, some things we can't, that we start to see Newcastle United, because this is becoming a story. This is becoming a crazy story where they look like a genuine top four threat or contender, where nobody, I don't think, is expecting that improvement, development, objective just yet. I mean, and I got to say, you know, we know they've spent money in the market, but it's not been crazy money. They've not bought in crazy amount of top players that you'd expect them to be challenging. No. They just haven't. This is a situation where the manager, Eddie Howe, was a great bit of business, and he's, yeah. I mean, maybe he's a little, he's overachieving, Rob, with this group. I mean, what he's done with Amaral and a few
others.
You'd
have to say, mate.
I think so. I mean, it's
brilliant. Joe Ellington
yeah,
has scored
as
well.
Yeah, there's a few.
Joe Ellington was out the door. Brazilian centre-forward who couldn't score.
Yeah, and even right now, Alexander Isak's out the side. Alan Saint-Maximin is not in the side. Mm. They're talking about Saint-Maximin having a job to get back into this team the way that it's playing right now. Now, it's just, you know, when you think of the job that he's done, I mean, like you said there, like bottom three this time last year to where they are now is pretty remarkable. And I'm looking forward to the next time we have him on a big window, an NBC window, or the early game or the late game, where we can focus on one game to take a closer look at them. Of course, we've seen tons of the highlights and we've seen a lot of games, but not as many as I want just recently to get a sense of what's going on. Amaral is just in that sweet spot in a career right now, Rob, where everything he's doing is not just good, it's like remarkable, and it's wow with some of the goals that he's scoring. Callum Wilson is scoring regularly. Bruno Guimarães looks like one of the best midfield players in the Premier League at this current moment in time, with everything else that Newcastle are doing with Eddie Howe in terms of entertaining, fast, attacking football, scoring goals, looking great at the back. It's becoming a big part of this season's Premier League, Newcastle United are.
Let me chuck one at you. So it was Callum Wilson, I believe, the couple of days before the game or something, saying that he should be on the plane to Qatar, put himself up there, got a couple of goals, including a penalty. You know, I made my notes looking at the game. You know, he can go over the top, Rob, to stretch people. He's still got good pace and physicality. He's decent enough on his hold-up play. He's back to goal. He can sniff a goal out in the box. He's kind of got a mix of most of the others. Wise thing or not, do you think, to put a bit of pressure on Gareth, a bit like, well, you know, don't forget about me?
Yeah, I don't mind it. I don't mind it. And it's going to be an interesting call by Gareth about this because, yeah, I've got four guys written down here. Ivan Toney, Callum Wilson, Dominic Calvert-Lewin, Marcus Rashford, that will all want to be there. I think Calvert-Lewin, in my opinion, it's too late. I know he's back now and I know what he's done for England before. I know what he can bring, but it's a bit late to throw him in. Ivan Toney has totally deserved it with the way that he plays. And is a different option at the World Cup. Who doesn't love an England player that can score a penalty and is almost 100% guaranteed? So I like that option. Yeah. Marcus Rashford's just done what he's done for United. We'll throw his possibilities in there now. And Callum Wilson. I mean, the only thing, of course, is the potential for injury. But if you're not, you know, maybe if you're not the starting player and you're during the World Cup, you should stay fit, just training and maybe coming off the bench. Mm. So I don't mind it. Yeah, I don't mind it. That's a tough one. It's going to be a real tough one in terms of who to take. What are you thinking when you? I mean, I like players to have earned it, and I like players that are fit and healthy, and I would favour Ivan Toney at this point, Rob. But
I'm between the two, Rob. I'm between the two. I think Callum Wilson, in some ways, is a bit of a mix of them all, so I can see that. Ivan Toney is a specialist in what he does, bit of a different option with his size and the way he plays. And as you've said, I mean, penalties, like, which has been a big problem for England in the past in tournaments, is good. So I would probably just lean for Toney, just on what I've seen this season.
And Rashford might get in another spot. Rashford might get in through a midfield spot, maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know.
One of the wider players. I mean, you know, no disrespect, but, you know, Raheem Sterling, who's nailed on, is not in particularly great form at the moment, going goals. So, you know, Gareth's got one or two issues to deal with. And before we move on, mate, just to wrap things up, I'm going to have my underappreciated performer of the week. And it's going to come from Newcastle United. And he's somebody who I've thought of, well, was close to the last couple of weeks. And then I read again today, yesterday on the report. So, Sven Botman, my friend.
Dutch
centre-back, he was bought into the football club from Lille. He's 22 years of age, 22, he's a kid. He's Dutch youth international all the way through. I don't think quite yet he's played for the full national squad. But good on the ball, aggressive, got that lovely feel, can play out from the back. He's part of the best defence in the league, only 10 goals conceded. Mm. Him and Fabian Schär have been a great centre-back partnership with Trippier and Dan Byrne, which you think is a bit of a weird mix, but works really well. He's quietly going along his business, mate, and potentially is a diamond. Sven is sneaky good. Yeah. And I just thought he was one of them that, you know, he came in a little bit, you know, when people were talking about the big spending and that, and he was bought in from Lille, and I think Eddie Howe did really well to get him because he had to, you know, sell the club, sell the dream. He's 22 years of age, you know, looks like he's going to go on to have a really big Dutch career. So Sven Botman, my friend, my underappreciated performer of the week.
You know what? I put him in the same category as, in terms of a signing like Bruno Guimaraes, a little bit under the radar, maybe not quite the real target of the big boys, but Newcastle United can go and offer him a big contract and say, come and be a part of this. Come and be part of something special.
Correct.
With your age, with what we can bring to you, what we're trying to achieve over a period of time. Yeah, I think particularly those two signings. I know that Dan Byrne and the big lad from Chris Wood from Burnley,
players have come in.
But I think those two, Botman and Bruno Guimaraes particularly, you know, they're good bits of recruitment. Okay.
Yeah, absolutely good recruitment. Everything going well. Just feel the results to catch up on, my friend. Crystal Palace 1, Southampton 1, Edouard with the goal. Yeah. It was a good play from Palace, winning the ball back, and they feed it into the box. Ed was in the right place at the right time. And Patrick's starting to get things ticking along now with Palace. I think there was a little bit of a worry that they were playing okay but not getting results. But it looks like he's starting to turn things around. I think that's 10th in the table now. And Palace 1-0 winners.
Good for Palace. I'll go on to Brentford 1.
Yeah.
Wolves 1.
Yeah.
Got to be honest, I'm a bit worried about Wolves. You know, haven't they said now they're not going to make an appointment?
Getting somebody in.
Until next year.
Until 2023, I know.
Brentford.
Forcing themselves in a corner, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a little bit. I'm worried for Wolves. All right, you look at the table now, minus 13 goal difference. It's the third worst in the Premier League. So that wasn't great. And then the final game, Rob, to recap, is a game that we did watch. It was a featured game of ours. Fulham 0, Everton 0. Again, more impressive work from Fulham, Rob. And I kind of like what Frank Lampard's doing at Everton. I like the lineup. Dominic Calvert-Lewin starting. Iwobi's playing well. You've got good threats on either side. I kind of like the Everton team on paper and how it's improving, developing. But Marcus Silva, again, you know, second half, they revved it up. And Everton were forced to go on the back foot.
Yeah.
They were the better team. And, I'm so impressed with... again, like we talk about the surprises of the season, Fulham in eighth position in the Premier League.
Yeah, Fulham
is pretty blimmin' remarkable.
Absolutely.
Good business, Rob. Good signings that are into the side. Issa Diop, a player that you've admired before from West Ham, was a good bit of business.
Yeah,
Palhinha,
we've
talked about. Pereira. Willian's looks sharp.
Willian's been good business, hasn't he? Yeah, Willian. Yeah. You know, he went there to train with him to get a bit of fitness, signed the contract, and now he's in the team.
He looks good. So, crazy. Well done.
Yeah, Marco Silva going back to Everton as well, proving that. I think we've all felt he's a decent coach in there, Rob. He's just had to, you know, get it right, and it's starting to look like that now. So, yeah, well done, Fulham. Be great if they can stay in there this year, having yo-yoed a few times before, and puts pressure on other teams. All right, my friend. It's been a good week for those setting the pace at the top of the table. The Gunners get 5. So they go back on top. Manchester City, Spurs, Newcastle and Manchester United all getting 3 points. So we're gearing up for a really interesting second half of the season as we look for top 4 spots. Liverpool, I'm afraid, nowhere near at the moment after another disappointing result for them. But we'll be back on Wednesday, November the 2nd. And that's to review the last group games of the Champions League with Tottenham in particular. They need points and a performance in Marseille midweek. But for now, I'm Earl, he's Musty, together with the two Robbies. Thanks for watching and listening. Be safe, stay healthy. It's a good night from me.
And it's good night from him. Good night.
Good night.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.